Let's start what we have come into the room to do. Right on. Here goes. One, two, three.
Good afternoon, Ann Arbor and the world. You are listening in general to WCBN FM Ann Arbor, your radio station for pure awesomeness, pure all the time. We are located here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and today, from noon to one, and every other Monday from noon to one, you are graced with the presence of It's Hot in Here Radio, the best and only environmental talk radio show here at WCBN. My name is Kat Superfisky, and I am joined in the studio today with an awesome group of people. To my left, no one out there can see, so I will tell them where everybody's sitting. To my left is my co-host for the day, Philip Denieri. Hello and welcome.
Hello, Kat. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming in. This is a pleasure. And then across the table from me, we are joined by Dave Askins from the Ann Arbor Chronicle.
Hello. It's
so
good to be here.
We have an awesome lineup today. Specifically, we're going to be talking about how journalism and news relate to the environment. So a really timely topic, given a lot of what's happening here in this day and age. But before we really jump into that, why don't we cut it off with a tune? Let's go to Sunday Papers with Joe Jackson.
At home and rolls her spastic eyes, but every weekend through the door come words of wisdom from the world outside. If you want to know about the bishop and the actress, if you want to know how to be a star, if you want to know about the stains on the mattress, you can read it in the Sunday papers. Stays out in the hall. Why should she go out when the TV's on? Whatever moves beyond these walls, she'll know the facts when Sunday comes along. If you wanna know about the mad punk rockers, if you wanna know how to play guitar, if you wanna know about any other suckers, the press. They wouldn't print it if it wasn't true. If you want to know about the gay politician, if you want to know how to drive your car, if you want to know about the new sex position,
doesn't love a little Joe Jackson harmonica?
I certainly do. I think there's a case to be made that cutting off Joe Jackson in the middle of the song is potentially problematic. But
we got things to talk about, Phil.
We've got important issues to get to, don't we?
We have really important issues. We are here talking about environmental news and journalism from noon to one. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this conversation. It's going to be a little bit one-sided. You guys can't really talk to the radio, and we can't hear you. But you can hear us, and that's why we like being on air. So, Phil.
Yes?
Why don't you tell me why the heck you are in studio with me today, being the co-host?
I guess I'm being the co-host because I have a background in the news business. So you asked me to say a little bit about that, so I will tell folks why I feel entitled to share my opinions on the news business. although, as people who know me know, I don't necessarily need to be qualified to do that. But I spent about 10 years being a conventional journalist first and then a conventional spinmeister. While I'm now an academic and a teacher and a researcher on some things, for the first about 10 years after I graduated from university, I worked in the public radio system for five of those in Detroit for WDET, reporting on local issues of all kinds, and fairly often submitting my stuff up the chain of command to NPR in Washington and for various other national outlets. And then, in part due to some of the frustrations with journalism as it's conventionally defined and operated in this country, I left there and went to something which, of course, has no controversy associated with it, state politics.
Nice transition.
And I worked on the media side of state politics, doing PR and spin and the like in the state Senate for about 5 years. So had a chance to get to know journalism from a couple different sides, and eventually decided that the way to investigate the stuff that I was interested in wasn't from the world of journalism. It was from a more scholarly, detached place, and thus I came here to U of M, and for the most part have been here ever since. So that's my background in news and journalism. I was in it and left it, and I believe Dave wasn't in it and relatively recently came to it.
That is accurate. I actually arrived in Ann Arbor as a trailing spouse. Mary Morgan, my wife, got a job with the Ann Arbor News in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s. I don't really remember exactly what year. And we moved from Rochester, New York, where I was in graduate school in linguistics. And we moved to Ann Arbor. And I sort of had to figure out what to do with my life. And I figured out various things to do between then and more recently. And Mary reached a point at the Ann Arbor News where she decided that she wanted to chart her own course, and I agreed to help her, and we have been doing this for about 4 years now, 4 years in September.
And this is the Ann Arbor Chronicle, annarborchronicle.com, which is...
Good point, Phil. I forgot the name of my own publication.
Well, I just wanted to point out for folks, it's... It is a nationally relevant example of one of the many places that journalism in an internet age can go. And when I say nationally relevant, it gets talked about in the circles that talk about what is journalism and what is it becoming. So it's not only a great asset for Ann Arbor and one of those, unfortunately, always dwindling things that continue to make Ann Arbor a unique place. But it's not just important here as a source of news for our community. The way that the Chronicle goes about its business is something that a lot of people are watching. So
since I've never really had a background in either news or journalism, can either one or both of you explain to me as well as the listeners out there, is there a difference between news and journalism? And if so, what is that difference and is it significant?
I would argue that it is. I mean, there are certainly people who, you know, do this kind of thinking and writing for a living, and they might have, a more fully thought out answer to that question. But I think you can draw a distinction between news as being what people are talking about and journalism as being authoritative reporting. Now, what constitutes authoritative and what makes it authoritative is something we can talk about. And it was merely a fact of the technological age we used to be in that news and journalism were pretty much the same thing. You know, there was the kind of news that you got from your interpersonal connections, you know, mm-hmm. gossiping with other people who are picking their kids up from school or whatever. And at any geography bigger than that, you were going to get it from a large institutional source of some kind. And that institution we can call journalism, the daily paper, the evening news, whatever. And so news and journalism were very much conflated. That was me hitting my microphone, folks. It's been a long time since I've been in radio.
You were gesturing all over the place, dude.
Yeah, they told me not to gesture. But nowadays, that line has very much blurred. And if you look at people, at how folks get their news, they get it through the same media that they get. They get their formal journalistic news through the same medium that they get their everyday neighborhood news. And the things have really blurred together. And we've learned, I think, to put a lot less faith in news just because it comes from a journalistic source as opposed to a seemingly non-journalistic source. So the definitions have gotten very blurred and very confused. But I do think there's a difference between news as what people are talking about, whether it's at a neighborhood scale or at a global scale, and journalism as a particular way of determining that, collecting it, delivering it to folks.
Because that's kind of how I saw the difference in terms of that. I saw news as more of, I guess, more of like the everything factual about whatever event was happening. And then journalism was somebody's or some group of people's take on it, that they were kind of editing and explaining what that actual news event was. That's always how I had thought about it, at least, like the difference.
Yeah, let me pick up on something that you described, namely the form mm-hmm. of the information that's being delivered. So now the form of the information that I deliver through the website of the Ann Arbor Chronicle looks pretty much the same in its outward form. I would argue that we have an amazing and stunning design, but ultimately it's a computer screen. It's mm-hmm. words and text and pictures on a computer screen. Any blogger can create the same thing. So in terms of its outward invisible form, there's nothing to suggest that there might be any difference. Whereas if I were to present you with a newspaper, you would automatically assume that there's some heft, some authoritative force behind the ability to and the wherewithal to produce that physical object. So there's a certain authoritative force that just comes from the physical form of the delivery of whatever information it is. But as far as news and journalism, I more or less think of it pretty much the way you described. So the news is that the Yankees won, perhaps even by a score of 7-3. The kind of description that you would expect from a journalist would be something along the lines of what actually happened during the game,
and
inning by inning.
And picking out key points that they want to report on.
Right. Or it could be, if we reported a baseball game in Chronicle style, we would just start with the first batter was, here's how he did, here it is pitch by pitch. So a more abbreviated version might be simply, you know, Derek Jeter hit a walk-off home run to win the game. That's what really would happen. But I would go a step further in distinguishing different kinds of writing that goes beyond just the news bit that the Yankees won. So if I want to write more, I fall back on my linguistics scientific training here. And in linguistics, you distinguish between description, analysis, and explanation. These are three distinct activities. The lines do blur between them, but if I go to describe what's going on in a language, all I'm trying to do is maybe do an inventory of sounds, try to identify some patterns. I'm just up to describing it. I'm not trying to analyze it in terms of a framework. I'm just trying to get it out there. Here's the data. Here's my organization of the data. An analysis is finding patterns and presenting those patterns in terms of some existing known framework that people are familiar with. And if I really want to get ambitious, I might actually espouse an opinion about what kind of a theory ought to be constructed to accommodate this analysis. So I think most of the effort in today's business of journalism goes into the other end. So generating opinion and attempting explanation without ever doing the basic descriptive work. And so we really consciously strive at the Ann Arbor Chronicle to focus on description as an activity and as a goal unto itself. So if we ever get to analysis, that's great, but that's more of a luxury than it is an essential thing, because you can't really do a good job, I don't think, analyzing or explaining something for a reader unless you first described it adequately.
So you're more interested at the Chronicle in terms of providing folks who come and visit the website and read the articles with kind of a lot of the factual information and almost like educating them on...
And the background, the history. So,
and then letting them kind of be the ones who analyze the facts and decide what they want to think
right,
about
it. Right, if there's an analysis to be done, that can be left to a reader or mm-hmm. someone else who might... I mean, a lot of times what happens and what I enjoy is when people will take the descriptions that we provide, the long, detailed descriptions and background information with the source documents, and then we'll go off and say, okay, here's what I've noticed based on the Chronicle's reporting. And I think that's an appropriate and healthy way to engage the community.
So the Chronicle's going about it, this idea of journalism, in a very unique way, I would say. But is that just me from the outside not knowing that a lot of these other kind of styles exist in terms of where it's the bulk of it is looking at, you know, relaying factual information and having kind of longer stories rather than, you know, the fast-paced news headlines and things like that that are trying to wow people into buying the, you know, the magazine or the paper or...
So are you asking, is the Chronicle sort of unique in our approach?
Yeah, or is it happening elsewhere?
I'm not aware that anybody else is saying, wow, yes, I would really like to write 15,000-word articles about city council meetings. Let me do that, too, for my town. But I think that it's certainly within reach. We're not using any journalistic superpowers mm-hmm. that we learned in journalism school. I didn't even go to journalism school. So... it's everything we're doing is within arm's reach of an ordinary citizen who's willing to put the time and effort and develop the skill set that's necessary to just extract the information.
Right, and that's the key, is this flattening of the journalistic landscape means that the barriers which used to be financial and technological, not anybody could just, you know, transmit a radio station from their backyard if they wanted to. There were engineering challenges and institutional regulatory challenges, et cetera, same thing with, newspapers. So you had this old universe where, because technology filtered how many folks could do it and how they had to be organized to do it, news and journalism took on one definition. Now, as is the case in so many aspects of life, because we've got this flattened technological landscape, the Chronicle rises and falls not on the strength of how much money is backing it, but on the strength of its own approach to how it wants to define news. And they have taken a model that says the way we're going to do things is we're going to go to the whole city council meeting and we're going to report everything that happens there, the things that fit with what we thought are supposed to be the story of the day and those things that don't necessarily fit. It's a very documentary approach to doing things. It's not the only model. It doesn't have to be the best model, but it works. And that's what the news business is changing into. And I think not to that one model, but to all of these different models. And so the question is, you know, where do we end up with that? In the end, is that a value add or not? People still clearly desire, you know, very conventional and very authoritative sources of journalism. But it's also the case that the practitioners of journalism no longer have a monopoly on expertise. The Chronicle demonstrates its expertise by what it does day in and day out, not by these previous sort of artificial filters to who's allowed to be the transmitter of news and who isn't.
And I would say that the audience, a lot of times, the people who are interested in getting the news are also kind of shifting and adapting over time. And I feel like the journalists are catering to that in terms of we like to see drama, and we like to kind of hear about those kind of things. And so you see those things, you know, relayed in the news reports and the way that they're pitched to people to catch people's attention. And that's something I definitely want to go more into in terms of what we see as being newsworthy and what it is that we take as a topic that's worth reporting on and writing an article on, or, you know, having up on the 11 o'clock news or whatever it is, versus something that we decide to kind of pass by and say we're not going to necessarily report on that. And one of the ways that I think it'd be interesting to do that is to take a look at the actual news that is happening today related to the environment. But before we get into that, let's take a brief break and listen to some Dirty Laundry hanging out on the line by Don Henley. And that's what I feel like you get oftentimes when you're looking at the news, folks. People airing out their dirty laundry. But that's just my opinion. You're listening to It's Hot in Here Radio. This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor. And today we are talking all about environmental news and joinalism.
Joinalism.
Joinalism. Yes. Even though we're in Michigan, we can talk like we're from New York.
All right. So I'm going to share some environmental news. Is that what I'm going to do next?
Yeah.
And maybe we can use that as a jumping off point to talk about how this changing journalistic environment can or cannot handle environmental issues, and whether or not it can do that any better now or worse than it used to be able to. All right. So I scanned the news this morning and grabbed a few things that I think we could talk about. Locally, an issue that's of interest to me and has been on the table recently, although not necessarily active today, is the so-called William Street Project. What the Ann Arbor Downtown Development Authority will do with several parking lots that it owns downtown, which at first glance is not an environmental story. But if you come at things from the perspective that folks from my field of study, urban planning, do, you understand that the intensity with which one develops parking lots in downtowns has a lot to do with the intensity with which cornfields get paved over and turned into urban sprawl. And one of the things that we can talk about is how a development controversy like that in this town, in part because of some of the pitfalls of the way the news treats it, doesn't often get reported on as being about that. It gets reported on as a backyard controversy. What do I want on the library lot versus what does somebody else want, without the ability to think at the larger environmental scale. So that's one thing. Another interesting thing from the news, a new frog species has been identified. And it has been identified not in the swampy wilds of northern Michigan, but in the heart of New York City.
Really?
Yes.
I was going to guess the Amazon is number two.
I mean, they may have discovered one there, but they have discovered there's a technical term for it that I can't remember. It's a subspecies.
Is it just mutated like crazy from?
Yeah, but it has developed enough with its own internal genetic code that it now clearly qualifies as a new frog species.
Wow.
And its range is pretty much, as I understand it, the five boroughs plus a little bit. And
how big are they?
The frogs?
Yeah.
I don't think very.
But there's these tiny little frogs, and then there's the kind of frogs that enter jumping contests.
Yeah.
Are these athlete frogs?
I would guess these are athlete frogs.
Okay.
I would guess one of the reasons that they went unnoticed for a long time is that, they aren't enormous.
They're not bullfrogs.
They're not bullfrogs. But their range apparently is centered on Yankee Stadium. So...
Huh.
That's our second, by the way, Yankee reference of the hour, which I think is fantastic. So that points out the way that the environment now is very much happening in the urban as much as it is in the rural or the backcountry. A third piece of environmental news, the climate is warming.
Don't tell my father.
I bring that up because at the environmental scale of time and geography— that really is a very pressing news item. But we don't have tools within either, I think, the old-fashioned news environment or the present-day news environment to really understand that and deal with it and process it. And that, to me, raises the very interesting question of how much does news and journalism, or whatever you want to call it, the infosphere, how much leverage does it really give us on the really important environmental challenges? It may give us a lot of leverage on, questions of should this tree be cut down or not? Should hydrofracking, happen at this location or not? Anyways, I'll throw that out there. And I know we've got one other news item to get to that Dave's got. So,
Yes, my news item. It's city council centric. Tonight, the Ann Arbor City Council will consider a resolution that will express the council's opposition to a pair of bills that's been passed by the Michigan State House that essentially, in concert, these two bills would allow grass clippings and other yard waste to be stuffed into landfills again after, I think it's been banned since 1990. With a stipulation that the landfill into which you put the grass clippings has to be one that collects methane gas and uses it to generate electricity. So the resolution that they'll be considering is one of opposition to these bills because we believe that this is not sound environmental practice. So that would be the news I would report out of the meeting. I know what's going to happen. They're going to vote it through, I'm pretty sure. There might be one or two council members who vote against it, but I think it has a decent chance of being unanimous. Those who oppose it will say something like, well, it's not really our business to tell the state legislature what to do, not that we have anything to say in particular about grass clippings. But that would be the news item. We were talking before Don Henley sang to us about, what was he singing to us about?
Dirty Laundry.
Dirty Laundry, yes. This distinction between news and the sort of the longer journalism part, what I would offer as the longer journalism part is, well, we have a landfill here in Ann Arbor that's closed that actually has such a gas collection system that generates electricity, and it generates something like 3,000 megawatts a year over the last 3 years. But if you look at the graph of its electricity production, in the last 3 years, there's been a marked decline. From my vague recollection looking at that graph this morning, it's maybe half of what it used to be. So it's settled down to this level, which is sort of an added value, an added context that helps a reader understand what the significance of this is for Ann Arbor. Why in the world does the Ann Arbor City Council care about this? Well, that's part of our history. We used to do this, but we're opposed to doing it in the future because we recognize that was not necessarily the best practice. It's just that, hey, you got a landfill full of methane gas, you might as well tap it and use it for electricity.
So that is a wide variety of different types of stories, some on the really local level, some on more of obviously the global level, looking at climate change.
Intentionally so, yes.
And so why is it, people in the studio, that these things have been reported to the greater population? Why is it that we're reporting on frogs that are being discovered? Why is it that we're reporting on climate change versus why are we reporting on, smaller, more localized issues on parking lots and different things happening at city council meetings? What is it that makes people figure out that this is something that I should be telling other people about?
I think for frogs, it's because they're cute. For the general climate change, it's because everybody understands weather. It's easy to talk about, and everybody has an opinion on weather, and it's fascinating. It's a go-to topic.
Mm-hmm. Especially in elevators.
Because, right, so, you know, we all experience weather, so that makes us experts. But for the William Street Project, I think that the reason journalists like to write about that in conventional journalistic style is because it has a built-in easy conflict to identify. So the typical J-School narrative model, where step one is identify a conflict, step two is to figure out who the actors are, and step three is to go around collecting quotes to put to give those actors lines so that you can tell a story with a plot that has a conflict and some sort of resolution, because that's one form of journalism that's taught. It's one that we at the Chronicle sort of actively reject, because I think that you have a better chance at understanding the underlying issue if it's not viewed through the lens of some narrative story that somebody else made up, essentially.
But like we've said and identified, that's actually, you know, the Ann Arbor Chronicle is in the minority in terms of reporting in that kind of a fashion. The structure and the kind of the equation that you brought up first, I feel like, is the reason that I look at journalism with a really, really skeptical eye. And I actually personally do not open up newspapers and do not go online to Yahoo or to New York Times or to whoever it is that has headlines up there. I purposefully try to steer clear of any sorts of news or journalism because I always feel like it's so skewed and that I'm not really getting an accurate representation of what's happening with a topic, and that I'd be much easier to find that in a textbook or something like that 10 years from now.
Would you feel more comfortable looking at those sources if it was crystal clear for every single item why that item was being presented to you and why the person who wrote that item was writing it?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that for us, that's sort of a lot of what we do, that information is built in. Mm-hmm. Why are we writing this this article about the city council? Well, because they met. That's why. Because they met and all this stuff happened there. That's what we do. That's why this is mentioned in our publication. But, I mean, we don't just report on meetings. And for those other items, it's equally important, I think, to say, all right, what inspired you to choose this as a topic? Why did you assign your intern to go off and do that research and do that story? I mean, why did you send your intern to a pie baking contest in Ypsilanti? And our answer was, oh, because the city charter of Ann Arbor specifies that the wards have to be pie wedge shaped. So we wanted essentially to do an educational piece in the context of redistricting, which we had to do in the wake of the census. And, you know, who better to ask which of the five wards of Ann Arbor was most pie shaped than entrants in a pie baking contest? So the reason, I mean, I'll grant you, it's not necessarily a serious reason, but it has a serious educational impact, I think. We presented that up front. Here's why we're writing about this. So it's not just we like pie, and these people are engaged in this pie baking competition, for some philanthropic reason. I can't remember even what the name of the organization is, which will not stand me in their good stead. Let me scramble here. It's a local food locavore type. Local food of Huron Valley, I want to say.
Sounds good.
Sure.
Let's just hope they're not listening.
Oh, let's hope they are listening.
But I would offer two things. First of all, I would make the argument that, Kat, you are none the poorer for not having any conventional news sources in your life.
I would argue that, too.
So that raises the question of what do these questions about environmental journalism amount to if it's the case that you are not only well-informed, but active, making change, sharing knowledge with others. You are yourself an information source on this stuff for a lot of people, and you don't need journalism to be a part of that universe for you at all. That, to me, raises the question of whether the whole thing is an echo chamber that we could do without. The second thing is, you mentioned your suspicion of the news because of how skewed it can be.
Right.
There is no news that isn't skewed. And some folks may label the rationale behind why they skewed it the way they did more than other folks label. I think the better news sources are self-critical and self-aware about the choices that they're making, and they're transparent about them. But the fact of the matter is, they're even the Chronicle, who's the heart of what they do are these in-depth reports on formal government action. And they have the crazy notion that if you want to cover government, maybe you ought to go to the meetings where the decisions are being made and hear what people have to say about them and report, you know, a lot of what gets said there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool, innovative model. But even there, editorial choices are being made. Even if every person who gets up and stands at public commentary is identified in the report that comes out of that meeting, the folks are paraphrased. And sometimes the like-minded comments are put together in the same sentence. And so there's always going to be a filter. There's always going to be something that journalists, you know, leave in or leave out. And so the idea of looking for, you know, the unskewed journalistic model or the one that got it right, I don't think there's any definition you can put out there that stands independent of the news that the individual consumer wants and is prepared for and is seeking. So back to your initial question of what made these things news stories and others not news stories is that they're the stories that people wanted. And if in the grand scheme of things, all that journalism can do is report to people what they want, which is based in large part on what they already know and what they know about things they haven't even heard about.
Mm-hmm.
It just want updates on the things they're already familiar with.
Right. So
just like a soap opera.
Then you can ask the question of how big of an impact, even if we could put our minds together, reach consensus, and create the bold, bestest, most wonderfulest model of the way to do, you know, local journalism and global journalism and mix it all together. And I have frankly thought up some of these schemes from time to time. I'm convinced that even if we came up with that, we would not markedly change the direction of policy, of societies in the largest scale. We would not have a meaningful impact on environmental problems and challenges any more than if we were in the old-fashioned world of the daily papers. And that's something we got to come to terms with.
So then what's the purpose of journalism?
A couple answers. The purpose of journalism is to tell folks stories that those folks want to hear. Now, that is a worthy undertaking. It can do important things. One of the stories that I'm not putting it down as saying it serves no purpose at all. It serves a huge purpose in informing people in their lives, everywhere from the mundane of did the Yankees win or not last night to, you know, what happened at the climate change conference. It serves a very important purpose. But does it have a meaningful impact on the direction of issues and the solution of challenges, for the sake of being argumentative, I would say no, it doesn't. And that, as I say, I just think that's a reality we have to deal with.
Well, I mean, I think that in actual practice, it might be the case that the function of a lot of journalistic enterprises is to provide people with the stories they want to hear. I think that, I mean, if you ask me, what's the purpose? I mean, what's my goal here when I spend 16 hours a day writing, you know, all these words onto a screen? It's not just the audience that might read that in the next day or week. I mean, as far as purpose, I really have an audience of maybe 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 50 years from now, who wants to understand why things are the way they are in the year 2030, so that they have an easy path to understanding all of that without having to piece together hundreds of different articles and snippets from different sources that each never really get very deep. I mean, for all of our nostalgia for the great journalism of the past newspaper era, the Ann Arbor District Library has this wonderful archive that they're putting together now. They're digitizing the old Ann Arbor News stuff, and it's great. I mean, no complaint, but as I rummage through that stuff, I'm struck by how these articles leave me wanting for way more detail. You know, I feel like, okay, I sort of have a vague notion of sorta kinda what happened, but it's not the kind of depth that I would prefer to see. So I mean, my purpose, part of it, is for a future audience.
And it looks like we have a caller. We have a caller.
Does this show take calls?
Looks like we do. Jeff Tenz is putting it through.
Do we make somebody angry?
Hello?
Hi.
You're listening and now talking to It's Hot in Here Radio.
Well, that's cool. Hi there.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was just listening to your conversation about the news, and I found it very interesting. It's something that I've spent a good deal thinking about the last couple of years. And something that I just thought I'd share, something that works for me, and I totally agree with your guest's opinion that the news, there's no such thing as unbiased or unskewed news. It's just a matter of being able to read through the lens, kind of, and pick out the facts, you know, because someone's opinion is going to be there, just because somebody chose to put it in, and you know, the editorialization of it. That process affects the information that gets presented and how it gets presented. So I think it's just a matter of being, well, number one, educating people so they know how to read the news, so that they can identify missing information that's actually important, or if they can just read an article and say, well, okay, this was omitted for some reason, I wonder why, you know, and then go do their own research. So that's just my opinion about that.
I think you're exactly right, and I think a lot of it goes into then, you know, we need to have discussions about how we do educate people on those kind of points and things like that. So thank you very much for listening and for calling in with your opinion. Greatly valued here at WCBN FM Ann Arbor.
Time for a tune.
I think it is time for a tune. Let's go into Patty Griffin, No Bad News.
Thank you.
All right. Again, that was Patty Griffin with No Bad News. And that's what I'd like to see, is no bad news being reported, because that is one of the main reasons that I keep my nose out of those kind of, you know, journalism reports and things like that, because I feel like it's all it's going to do is depress me and make me a sad Sandy that then is not going to be as effective as this, like, energy ball of a citizen bouncing around, you know, igniting a bunch of other people's interest. So that is one of the main reasons that I steer clear of that. But I know that a lot of times it's not just bad news that's being celebrated on the headlines and things like that. So...
Yes.
Phil's mouth just opened.
Sorry.
Are you catching flies or?
No, I am preparing to say something hugely profound. Oh, I wish. No, I was going to say, you know, we've talked a lot about news, its fault, where it fits. If the overall topic of conversation today is environmental news, environmental journalism, it probably makes sense to talk a little bit about the environmental half of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And so what makes something environmental news as opposed to just, you know, regular news? And what are the uniquenesses of the environmental field? And the one of the things that I started to say earlier is that the environment... the way that we do news frequently flies under the flag of being environmental, and it's not really. So that which passes for environmental journalism or environmental news is not directing itself to the questions that the environment requires of us. So the earlier example was this thing with the parking lots in Ann Arbor. We don't treat that as an environmental thing, but it really is. Another example to me is climate change, which it seems to me every single question across all sorts of fields ultimately has to come back to climate change for us. And a writer and thinker who I'm very fond of, who I assign in my class, is a guy named Bill McKibben, wrote a couple of years ago that climate change is not an environmental problem. And he said... and I pulled it up here so that I could quote him accurately. He says about climate change that environmentalists were the first to sound the alarm, but carbon dioxide is not like traditional pollution. There's no Clean Air Act that can solve it. And he goes on to give environmentalists credit for a lot of the work that they have done. He said if it's protecting the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, the environmentalists are who you want. But climate change... because it's about the way we order society, it's about our economy, it's about things that are much more complex than simply, are we going to preserve this or not? Are we going to protect this or not? That it's not really an environmental problem. So my larger point is, environmental journalism is frequently about stories that self-labeled environmentalists say is the news. If we need conflict, if we need action at a public meeting for something to make it onto the news agenda, then if you say, I'm an environmentalist, and therefore I am at this meeting and I'm standing up for the environment, well, that becomes the environmental news agenda. I don't think that environmental news agenda matches up very well with the agenda, as I say, that the environment requires of us, that our climate changed future requires of us. Was that even remotely profound?
It was. It was okay. Super profound.
Okay, great.
I just got knocked off my seat a bit.
I feel better now.
Do you think that, you know, going back to the No Bad News Patty Griffin song, do you think that that typically you'd find that things that are being reported on under the veil of environmental journalism are using kind of that gloom and doom and drama-soaked methodology to hopefully knock people upside the head to get them interested in something like climate change, where, you know, like the polar bears are dying and your beach house on the Florida coastline is going to be underwater and dun-dun-dun. And, like, are they preying on that more than other journalistic realms, do you think?
Well, I think they are, but with good reason. I mean, your beach house is going to get washed into the sea, and the polar bears are going to lose their habitat with the melting ice cap. So, but yeah, I think the idea that the standard journalistic narrative of conflict, of there's this side of the question and there's that side of the question, that that drives everything. And you're always going to be in that world of you know, he said, she said, this side said one thing and the other side said the other, if you come at a question journalistically or from a conventional news format.
Mm-hmm.
And if we come at the climate stuff that way, we're not going to win. One of the expressions the folks use about this is false equivalence, right? If you make two things equal, the Republicans said this and the Democrats said that. Well, you've done your job as a journalist or at the level of the city council meeting. If you said, you know, the folks in favor of the development said this and the folks against the development said that, you've met the challenge of reporting what the two sides said. You've not, I don't think, though, necessarily advanced the understanding of the entire problem in its full context and the real choices that have to be made. That might have been a swipe at Dave in the Chronicle, so
that's kind of what I was.
Yeah. Actually, it's something that we do struggle with, this idea that, you know, our core mission is to describe what happened at that public meeting. People say all kinds of things. And I would divide, I guess, the actors in those scenes into the public officials who are actually the public body doing the deliberations, and then people who might say things during public commentary. So for me, it is important and, in fact, enough to report what public officials say at public meetings. So I think it counts more when a council member says at the council table, I believe X, Y, Z, and my opinion on this is that we should do A, B, C, than to at some point go to a reporter and whisper in his ear, I think this, because that conversation with a reporter is not challengeable immediately in the context. So somehow, you know, when you're speaking in your proper habitat, I'm trying to loop the environmental theme into this. When you're speaking in your proper habitat, that gives it more credence. And so that kind of coverage I'm content with. The part that does give me pause about, okay, what should we do in addition, is when people stand up, say, at public commentary and say, hey, there's this awful thing. Somebody's polluting at this location. Somebody ought to look into it. And usually the somebody they mean is some journalist or some city council person or a city staff person, you know, who knows. But there is it triggers a reflex of maybe I should do that, but it comes down to energy.
Right.
So, you know, do I have the capacity to go and chase that story? Who knows whether it might turn out to be true, have any merit at all, but there's only a finite capacity. And so for me, the way I rationalize it, the way I, you know, sleep at night, the small number of hours that I do sleep, is to say, well, look, I've documented that. Perhaps a reader will say, huh, that's interesting. Let me look into that, and might leave a comment saying, oh, this has been, you know, widely assumed to be true. It's not, in fact, true. Or whatever. Or, yes, in fact, it's absolutely true. And here, I've already done all this research. So I think it's a fair question, and I don't always have a great answer other than I feel kind of bad sometimes that we don't have the energy to go out and do additional stories based on what people say at public meetings.
But one thing that I think is critical is the idea that the readers of the Chronicle and other such sources, they in some sense become the journalists themselves. So something will be on there, and the Chronicle may not have the time or the energy or the wherewithal to run that down, but other folks will, and they will chime in. And their authority comes from, look, do these folks seem to be informed? Do they seem to be reporting in a trustworthy way? Or do they seem to be foaming at the mouth and trying to advance an agenda? And so, yes, we're in a world where things are a lot muddier, and you have to determine, as the caller said, the authoritativeness or the trustworthiness of these various sources for yourself. But the really cool thing about this model is that we all become participants of and take ownership for the news and the community's understanding of things, and we contribute to it. And something as simple as you know, rounding up folks to contribute to a Google Doc to report election returns. That's, you know, that's not high tech anymore. But that's a way that we all look at the city election and take ownership for reporting it. We all go in, you know, we trust the other folks who are over at the other precinct to do that. And that's a really exciting part of this, I think.
So is that where we think that news should be headed and journalism should be headed? I mean, we've talked about a lot today in the course of this hour, and I wish that we had more time to do so. But what I want to spend the last couple minutes, literally couple minutes, talking about is kind of the future of news and journalism, given what we've talked about in terms of the current state of it and the purpose of it, even the difference between news and journalism and kind of how it's evolved over time, some of the challenges. But now, you know, we definitely have a lot to work with, and where do we think it should be pushed forward in the future? Should we go more towards the Ann Arbor Chronicle type of a model?
Yes. Yes, the combination of that kind of reporting, that kind of honest self-reflection on what is our mission and how well are we meeting it, mm-hmm. and the involvement of the citizenry in creating their own news and taking ownership of it, that can take many, many different forms. But in that general class of things, I think that's, you know, that's where we should be headed.
What do you think in terms of different types of I guess, medium for media, and, you know, looking at websites versus, you know, web-based ones versus print material versus television? Do we see one being better than the other? Do we have any thoughts on any of that?
My thought is that whatever the journalistic or news mission is, it should ideally be independent of whatever technology platform is used to deliver it. I mean, the only reason we deliver the Chronicle over the internet is that it's way cheaper than printing it on pieces of paper. I mean, if we had the wherewithal, if we had the capital backing to...
You'd be chipping it into stone.
Absolutely.
Me too. Oh, let's leave it on that, huh, yeah, folks?
Yes.
That was great. I cannot thank both of you enough for coming in. Phil, Dave, it's been a pleasure spending the last hour with you. Folks listening out there in listener land, thank you again for tuning in. Again, this is It's Hot in Here Radio. We're going to take a bit of a break next week, but then we'll be back the following week talking about religion and the environment with Rolf Bauma and other folks from the campus ministry here on campus. This is WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. Thank you so much for listening. You guys, thank you so much for coming into the studio. Jeff Tenza, high five through the glass. Thank you so much for engineering. And hopefully you guys got a nice taste of environmental news and journalism today. Why don't we go out on a really nice cut from Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show. This one is Cover of the Rolling Stone.
I don't believe it. Don't touch me. Hey, Ray. Hey, Sugar. Tell them who we are. Well, we're big rock singers, we got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go.
That sounds like us.
We sing about beauty and we sing about truth at $10,000 a show.
Right.
We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills, but the thrill we never know is the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother?
Yeah.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone?
That's a very, very good idea.
I got a freaky old lady named a Cocaine Kitty who embroideries on my jeans. I got my poor old gray-haired daddy driving my limousine.
Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown like the blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see our pictures on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for our mother?
Stone.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone? Little teenage blue-eyed groupies who do anything we say. We got a genuine Indian guru, he's teaching us a better way. We got all the friends that money can buy, so we never have to be alone. And we keep getting richer, but we can't get our picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Uh-huh. Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother?
Stone.
Wanna see my smiling face?
another. We ain't on a couple about that. We're cowboys for my fellas. Ain't she that smart?
We will make a phone
of the color of the road and show.
Right up front, man. I can see it now.
Be on the front smiling, man.